Om Ajnatam Anandasya Janajana Salakaya Saksu Smritan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stupitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Upakadamayam Dadati Sabanadikam. Vanshikabhadurvasya Kripasandubhai Bacha Titanam Bhagalibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. The demigods are very fearful after Dhritarashtra appeared because he was huge and powerful. Dhritarashtra means one who can cover. So practically he could cover the entire world by his potency. So Chator Vidha Bhajante Imam Jana Sukritino Arjuna. When the when someone who is pious is in difficulty, distress, he'll take shelter of God, while someone who is impious, namam duskritino mudha papadyante naradama, when someone is impious is in difficulty, he'll do just the opposite. He'll take shelter of some speculative methodology or some intoxication or some violence or something. So the demigods were in great distress. And although taking shelter of the Lord when one is in distress can't be considered pure devotion, because pure devotion is on a different level. When one approaches the Lord when one's in distress, his prime motivation is to remove the distress. When one approaches the Lord in pure devotional service, his prime motivation is to please the Lord, whether he's in distress, whether he loses everything, whether he gains everything, is irrelevant to him. What's the core point of it, the core principle, motivational principle, is to please the Lord. So that platform is above approaching the Lord in distress, but yet both are considered glorious. And one, unless one is a Sukritino or a pious person, he can't approach the Lord when he's in distress. And the result of doing that, approaching the Lord when one is in distress, is that one is purified, as well as, of course, it's up to Krishna really how he deals with the distress, but yet one's distress will be removed and one is purified nevertheless. So the demigods approached Lord Narayan for protection when they were fearful of Dhritarashtra, and they offered prayers to him, which we read yesterday. And as a result of those sincere prayers requesting the Lord to protect them, the Lord appeared. We'll just quickly go over the prayers. They first acknowledge that it is He, the Lord, who is the source and the controller of time. He is the one who can give protection. Because ultimately, what is everyone afraid of? They're afraid of time. We usually don't think of time as being the thing that we're afraid of. We usually think of time as quite friendly, in a sense we wear our timepiece around our wrists or whatever. It's time to do this wonderful thing and that wonderful thing that we have planned. And if we're in a difficult situation, we usually think, oh, time, it's almost over. If we're in a situation we don't like, the time for it is almost over. But actually, time's function is to crush everyone. And it's just a matter of time before The thing that we're most attached to is completely destroyed. What is the thing we're most attached to? Yep. This is the source of our identification at this point. We think we're this, the body. And it's just a matter of time between it returned into dust and air and whatever, all the other parts, the water, etc. So Krishna is the controller of that time, and therefore he is the one who can ultimately give protection. He is complete, he is spiritually perfect, always jubilant, fully satisfied. He doesn't need anything. So much of the difficulties that we have is that we don't know where to look for what we need. The thing that we're missing is the connection with Krishna. And we look elsewhere, feeling very empty. And we already have that connection with Krishna, just as a matter of awakening it. So looking elsewhere, looking to anyone else for protection, is considered, the demigods explain, like trying to cross the ocean by
holding
on to the tail of a swimming dog. Of course, what's going to happen? Yes, exactly. You and the doggy will drown. If you hold on to his bark, you'll do better. His bark can float, maybe. But no, you'll drown. And then how he protected the Lord from as Matsya, how he protected Brahma when he was creating huge problems. And therefore, please protect us. And even though in our imperfection, in our thinking ourselves independent, we're unable to see you, the super soul, who is pervading and supporting everything, still we take shelter of you. We understand that you, that all the incarnations of God that come to this world are coming from you, and how you, the principles that make the material world run, the male and female principles, the material energy, the spiritual energy, parayam idas tvanam prakriti vidime svayam jiva bhuta mahabaho jaye dam daryate jagat, these principles also come from him. So he is the Supreme Lord, and therefore they beg him for protection. Now in text 28 we hear how the Lord appears. Sukadev Goswami says to Maharaj Prickett, to the king, he says, "My dear king, when all the demigod offered him their prayers, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hari," you know what Hari means? Not Hari up, not like that, but in Sanskrit, do you know what the word Hari means? Anyone know? Yeah, right. So he's going to take away. Hari means he who takes away. He's going to take away the fear of the demigods. Thank you. The demigods offered him prayers. The Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, Lord Hari, carrying his weapons, the conch shell, disc, and club, appeared first within their hearts and then before them. Surrounding and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, another name of the Lord, were 16 personal attendants decorated with ornaments and appearing exactly like him, but without the mark of Srivats and the Kastuba jewel. The Lord wears, has two specific markings that none of his followers have. One is a tiny white hair upon his chest, not a tiny, but a white hair upon his chest, which symbolizes the goddess of fortune. And the other is a great gem, Kastuba jewel, which, around his neck, which signifies all the living entities. O king, when all the demigods saw the Supreme Lord in that posture, smiling with eyes like the petals of lotuses grown in autumn, they were overwhelmed with happiness and immediately fell down like rods offering dandavats. They offered their obeisances fully flat upon the ground praying to him. Then they slowly rose and pleased the Lord by offering him prayers. So they prayed for him to come, and when he arrived, they prayed to him. And they're going to, at the end of their prayers, they're going to make their request to the Lord. But before they, the greatest person has come, now what do you think is the first thing they're going to do? They're going to say, oh, you've come. Okay, here's my list. No, before that, before telling him exactly what they want, they're going to glorify him and not throw at him some prayers and words that don't exactly apply to them. They know his glory, so they're going to describe his glories and his powers in a very sweet way. The demigod said, from text 31 to 38, they describe the glories of the Lord. The demigod said, we'll read 31 and 32 first. And read Prabhupada's purport to 32. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are competent to give the results of sacrifice. And you are also the time factor that destroys all such results in due course. So you give and you take. And before they glorified him as being the time factor as well. Now, you give and you take. By your mercy you give and through time you take. You are the one who releases the chakra to kill the demons. The Lord has a Sudarsana chakra, his disc. And actually the time factor is that chakra. And ultimately that time factor does, as the chakra, will kill all the demons and everyone in the material world. O Lord, who possesses many varieties of names, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you. O Supreme Controller, you control the three destinations. Whether someone is promoted to the heavenly planets, birth as a human being, or condemnation to hell. Yet your abode, your supreme abode, is Vaikuntha-dham, the spiritual world. Since we appeared after you created this cosmic manifestation, your activities are impossible for us to understand. Because they appeared after him. He appeared prior to them. So what can they know about him? Only what he tells them. Just like, what can we know about our parents? Only what they tell us. Or we hear from those who know our parents. We weren't there, so we can't know what they did when they were young and where they lived and how they grew up and what affected their lives, unless they tell us. So we appeared after you created this cosmic manifestation. Your activities are impossible for us to understand. We therefore have nothing to offer you but our humble obeisances. So they were feeling, even though they were powerful demigods, they were feeling bereft of anything of value to offer because they were standing before the Supreme Lord. So they said, all we can offer you is our obeisances, our submissions to you. Here's Prabhupada's purport. An inexperienced man generally does not know what to beg from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is under the jurisdiction of the created material world, and no one knows what benediction to ask when praying to the Supreme Lord. People generally pray to be promoted to the heavenly planets, because they have no information of Vaikuntha Loka. So there's those three destinations. Either people, if they perform horrendous activities, sinful activities, they will go to hell. If they perform passionate activities, and have so many material desires, they end up again as humans at earth, on earth possibly. And if one performs extremely pious activities, one will go to heaven and really enjoy in a very subtle way. So people generally don't want to go to hell, and they don't mind being humans, but long as they're in a better situation. But really, people prefer heavenly delights. And they look at those who have opulence with envy in their eyes, and they want those situations. So people want, desire those things. But little do they know about the spiritual world. So Prabhupada's explaining that. That people generally don't know what to beg from the Lord. So people go to God and pray for bread or to defeat their enemies or to gain this type of material prosperity or to cure this disease or that. People don't know what to actually ask Him for. He's capable of awarding the destination of the spiritual world to the living entity. But our desires are so bound to the material world, but actually we should be desiring that. So everyone is under the jurisdiction of the created material world, and no one knows what benediction to ask when praying to the Supreme Lord. People generally pray to be promoted to the heavenly planets because they have no information of Vaikuntha Loka, the spiritual world. Srila Madhvacharya quotes the following verse. Devalokat Pitrilokat Narayat Shapiyat Param Tisrebya Paramam Stanam Vaishnavam Vidushangati. There are different planetary systems known as Devaloka, the planet of the demigods, Pitraloka, the planet of the Pittas, Naraya, the hellish planets. When one transcends these various planetary systems and enters Vaikuntha Loka, he achieves the ultimate resort of the Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas have nothing to do with the other planetary systems. The difference between the three grades of planetary systems from hell to heaven in the material world is that we are imagining that we are the center. And in the spiritual world, everyone is devotionally inclined, purely devotionally inclined to Krishna, and He is the center. So as long as we wish to be the center, we remain in the material world. So the demigods have to say that you are the time factor, you're the creator, you're the controller. In text 33 they say, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, now they're going to describe how He is realized. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, He who can award Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, to us, how is He realized? O Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Narayan, O Vasudeva, original person, O most exalted person, O supreme experience, welfare personified, O supreme benediction, supremely merciful and changeless, O support of the cosmic manifestation, sole proprietor of all planetary systems, master of everything, and husband of the goddess of fortune. Your lordship is realized by the topmost sannyasis who wander about the world to preach Krishna consciousness fully absorbed in samadhi through bhakti yoga. What does that mean? They are wandering around the world, fully detached sannyasis, fully depending upon Him, preaching His glories, fully absorbed through bhakti yoga in samadhi. Samadhi means samadhi. Their meditation is fixed. Their meditation upon Him is fully focused. Right now, we are bhushaka tanantascha. We're like a tree that has many branches with our thoughts and our desires. Some go this way, some are spiritual, some are material, some are heavenly, some are ghastly. Bahushaka, unending desires. But these exalted personalities, their minds are fully focused and concentrated upon the Lord. That's bhakti. Because their minds are concentrated upon you, they can receive the conception of your personality in their fully purified hearts. Because they are pure, their hearts are pure, they can receive that conception. In other words, the Lord reveals it to them. When the darkness in their hearts is completely eradicated and you are revealed to them, the transcendental bliss they enjoy is the transcendental form of your Lordship. So that is the result that they get. They don't gain material heaven. What they gain is the Lord's presence within their hearts, and that is blissful, because the Lord, His form itself is composed of bliss. So the transcendental bliss they enjoy is the transcendental form of the Lord that she reveals to them. No one but such persons can realize you, those who are traveling preachers, fully detached from the material world, fully focused upon Him. Therefore, we simply offer you our respectful obeisances. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has numerous transcendental names pertaining to different grades of revelation to various grades of devotees and transcendentalists. In other words, as He's unlimited, there's so many ways that one can understand His glories. In fact, that was the first half of the verse, was describing Him in so many wonderful ways. Supreme Personality of Godhead, most exalted person, the supreme experience, the original person, changeless person, supremely merciful. He has so many different names because He has unlimited attributes and qualities. The master of everything. That means that there is nothing that He is not the master of. So depending upon the depth of one's realization, one will realize the Lord in one way or another and refer to Him in one way or another based on the realization. When He is realized in His impersonal form, He is called the Supreme Brahman. When realized as the Paramatma in everyone's heart, He is called the Antyami, the indwelling witness. And when He expands Himself in different forms for material creation, He is called Chiradaksha Vishnu, Gobadaksha Vishnu, Karanadaksha Vishnu. When He is realized as Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, the Chaturvyuha, who are beyond the three forms of Vishnu, He is in the Vaikuntha. He is the Vaikuntha Narayan. Above realization of Narayan is realization of Baladev. And above that is realization of Krishna. All these realizations are possible when one fully engages in devotional service. One engages fully in devotional service. The covered core of the heart, of one's heart, is then completely open to receiving an understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His various forms. When one engages purely in devotion, that's the uncontaminated pure heart. And when the pure heart blossoms like a lotus, then the Lord can sit in the lotus of the heart. Depending upon the taste that we have, you will come in that particular way. That was actually described yad-yad-diyatad urugayava bhavayanti tam-tan-tad-tad pranayeshe saranugraya. By His own mercy, He comes into the heart. You are independent. Oh, more glories of the Lord. So this is how to realize that Lord. And again, He's offering obeisances. O Lord, you need no support. That means He is independent. And although you have no material body, you do not need cooperation from us. Since you are the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and you supply its material ingredients without being transformed, you create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation by yourself. Nevertheless, although you appear to engage in material activity, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to understand. So the demigods are explaining that you are fully independent. You have nothing to do with the material world. You don't depend on it. But yet you are the cause of the material world. It depends upon you. So are you affected? Are you affected when with the activities of the material world, because they're depending upon you? Do they affect you? They couldn't affect you because you are transcendental. Just like if you're a businessman and the whole business is resting upon your brain and you're sitting in the office as the head of the business. When something goes well, you feel happy. And when you lose all your money, the boss feels miserable. Sometimes they may even jump out the window if they're on a high enough floor. So in the material world, this Krishna like that, everything is resting upon him. Is the one whom everything is resting upon, is he entangled in the activities of the things that rest upon him? No. But it seems from all our experience that the one whom everything rests upon is dealing with the things that rest upon him. So it seems from experience that Krishna would be affected by the activities of the material world, that he would be transformed by them. Affected means in some way or another, transformed. But yet, although you appear to be like that from one point of view, yet you are transcendental to all material qualities. You have nothing to do with the material world. So this is what it means to be God. Well, one of the aspects that everything rests upon you, but you are completely independent. That's called Achintya Veda Veda. How everything is simultaneously, inconceivably different and non-different from him. He's separate, yet everything rests upon him. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to understand. The Brahma Samhita says, Goloka eva nivasatya kilatma bhuta. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is always situated in Goloka Vrindavan. He's in the spiritual world. He's always just... Prabhupada told how one of his God brothers, he was a German. Well, he came to India in the early part of the 20th century seeking spiritual knowledge, and he went around to so many different temples, and he saw that Lord Shiva, the temple of Lord Shiva was dancing in that destruction dance, and Brahma was creating, and this demigod was doing that. And then when he saw that Krishna was just playing his flute, just enjoying himself, he said, this is God. Although everything is resting upon Krishna, he doesn't do anything to do, doesn't have anything to do with the material world, and he doesn't do everything directly. He's so powerful. So everything rests upon him, yet he is transcendental. So Krishna is always situated in Goloka Vrindavan. It is also said, Vrindavanam Prityaja Paramekam Nakachati. Krishna never goes even a step from Vrindavan. Nevertheless, although Krishna is situated in his own abode, Goloka Vrindavan, he is simultaneously all-pervading and is therefore present everywhere. He is everywhere in the material world, but he himself is in Vrindavan, never taking a step out of Vrindavan. Palamekam nagachati. So he's all-pervading everywhere through his expansions and energies. But he himself is in Vrindavan. So he is simultaneously all-pervading and is therefore present everywhere, although he's in Vrindavan. This is very difficult for a conditioned soul to understand. But devotees can understand how Krishna, without undergoing any changes, can simultaneously be in his abode and be all-pervasive. The materialist wants to think that if something is all pervasive, he is everywhere and he's nowhere specifically. But that is not understanding the incredible potency of the Lord, that he can be everywhere simultaneously and specifically somewhere simultaneously. This is inconceivable, and yet this is the inconceivable power of the Lord. And if the Lord doesn't have inconceivable power, if everything is finite and conceivable, then what is the meaning to him being God? The demigods who are speaking are understood to be the various limbs of the Supreme Lord's body. Although the Supreme Lord has no material body and does not need anyone's help, he is spread everywhere. Maya tatamidam savam jagaravyakta motina. Nevertheless, he is not present everywhere in his spiritual form. According to the Mayavad philosophy, the Supreme Truth, being all pervasive, does not need a transcendental form. The Mayavadis suppose that since his form is distributed everywhere, he has no form. This is untrue. They think it's like if you take a piece of paper or something, and then you take that paper and rip it up into so many pieces and throw it throughout the room. So because the paper becomes everywhere throughout the room, it is no longer existing as a paper anymore in one place. But Krishna is not like that. He does both. So that's a materialistic understanding of the potency of God. The Lord keeps his transcendental form, Prabhupada continues, and at the same time, he extends everywhere and every nook and corner of the material creation. So the demigods are saying, you are very hard to understand. Of course, he's the Supreme Lord. These are our inquiries. The ordinary conditioned soul is subject to material laws, and he thus receives the fruits of his actions. That's clear, that when we do something, we get results from that which we do. So that's ordinary conditioned souls. And they're going to ask a question now. Does your lordship, like an ordinary human being, exist within the material world in a body produced by the material modes? Do you enjoy or suffer the good or bad results of actions under the influence of time, past work, and so forth? Or, on the contrary, are you present here only as a neutral witness who is self-sufficient, free from all material desires, and always full of spiritual potency? We certainly cannot understand your actual position. So what are they asking? Because they've seen the Lord, God, in front of them, and their concept of God, too, is that he's all-pervading, so powerful. And they see that the people standing next to them, the other demigods, all have their material forms and are affected by the material world. Is the Lord like that? Is he also entangled like that? Affected by his work? Affected by the influence of time and so forth? Or are you completely neutral, a neutral witness, the super soul? Self-sufficient, free from all material desires, full of spiritual potency. They're asking, are you a material Lord, touched by matter, under the control of the material energy? Or are you fully transcendental, even though you're standing right there before us? Are you beyond? We certainly cannot understand your actual position. So this is the way to understand, is by asking the Lord himself, or those who know the Lord, or the Shastras, hearing the words of the Lord. He explains his position. Otherwise, he is transcendental. He is beyond our ability to understand him by our own power. So they ask, and Prabhupada will explain, of course. In the Bhagavad Gita, this is the Prabhupada's purport to text 25, Krishna says that he descends to this material world for two purposes, namely Puritranaya Sadonam Vinashaya Chitaskritam, to relieve the devotees and kill demons or non-devotees. These two kinds of actions are the same for the Supreme Lord. When the Lord comes to punish the demons, he bestows his favor upon them. And similarly, When he delivers his devotees and gives them relief, he also bestows his favor. Thus the Lord bestows his favor equally upon the conditioned souls. When a conditioned soul gives relief to others, he acts piously. And when he gives trouble to others, he acts impiously. But the Lord is neither pious nor impious. He is always full in his spiritual potency, by which he shows equal mercy to the punishable and the protectable. The Lord is apapavidham. He is never contaminated by the reactions of so-called sinful activities. When Krishna was present on this earth, he killed many inimical non-devotees, but they all received sarupya. In other words, they returned to their original spiritual bodies. One who does not know the Lord's position says that God is unkind to him but merciful to others. Actually, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Name Dvesho Stina Priya. I am equal to everyone. No one is my enemy and no one is my friend. But he also says, Ye Vajanti Tumam Bhaktya Maya Teteshu Chapyaham. If one becomes my devotee and fully surrenders unto me, I give him special attention. So all the Lord's acts are good. There is no question of piety and impiety on the material level. Although from the material position it may appear so. But actually everything he does is fully transcendental and all good. That is the meaning of him being the absolute truth. But yet, although he is kind to everyone and merciful to everyone, ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya amaya titesha shapyam, he is especially merciful to his devotees. So he has so many qualities like this, and sometimes they appear to contradict each other. Samoham sarvabhuteshu, he is equal to everyone. Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya, but he's specially kind to his devotees. So does that mean he's equal to everyone? How could he be especially kind to his devotees? That means he's partial, if he's equal to everyone. So it appears contradictory. So therefore the demigods ask, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, they state in glorifying him who is standing right before them. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, all contradictions can be reconciled in you. O Lord, since you are the Supreme Person, the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities, the Supreme Controller, your unlimited glories are inconceivable to the conditioned souls. Many modern theologians argue about right and wrong without knowing what is actually right. Their arguments are always false and their judgments inconclusive because they have no authorized evidence with which to gain knowledge of you. Because their minds are agitated by scriptures containing false conclusions, they are unable to understand the truth concerning you. Furthermore, because of polluted eagerness to arrive at the right conclusion, their theories are incapable of revealing you who are transcendental to their material conceptions. I like that. Polluted eagerness. That means not true eagerness based on love, but based on some self-motivation. This is why we don't attain the realizations that we desire. It's because our eagerness is, at least I speak for myself, is polluted by, it's not pure. You are one without a second, and therefore in you contradictions like doing and not doing, happiness and distress, are not contradictory. Your potency is so great that it can do and undo anything as you like. With the help of that potency, what is impossible for you? Since there is no duality in your constitutional position, you can do everything by the influence of your energy. Read part of Prabhupada's purport. We should not be astonished to find contradictions in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, there are no contradictions. That is the meaning of his being supreme. Because he is all-powerful, he is not subject to the conditioned soul's arguments regarding his existence or non-existence. He is pleased to protect his devotees by killing their enemies. He enjoys both the killing and the protecting. Such freedom from duality applies not only to the Lord, but also to his devotees. In Vrindavan, the damsels of Brajabhumi enjoy transcendental bliss in the company of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And they feel the same transcendental bliss in separation when Krishna and Balaram leave Vrindavan for Mathura. There is no question of material pains or pleasures for either the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his pure devotees, although they are sometimes superficially said to be distressed or happy. One who is Atmaram is blissful in both ways. Non-devotees cannot understand the contradictions present in the Supreme Lord or his devotees. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Bhaktyamam abhijananti. The transcendental pastimes can be understood through devotional service. To non-devotees, they are inconceivable. Achintyakalu ye bhavanatams takena yojayet. The Supreme Lord and his form, name, pastimes, and paraphernalia are inconceivable to non-devotees, and one should not try to understand such reality simply by logical arguments. They will not bring one to the right conclusion about the Absolute Truth. So one, to understand the Absolute Truth, we have to understand that we are incapable of understanding by the ascending method of using our own logic and what seems right and wrong, accurate, inaccurate, true, contradictory. No, that isn't the process of understanding. Rather, we have to hear in the transcendental path. Otherwise, through logic alone, we will not understand correctly the conclusions about the Absolute Truth. An example. A rope causes fear for a bewildered person who considers it a snake, but not for a person with proper intelligence who knows it to be only a rope. Similarly, you as the Supersoul in everyone's heart inspires fear or fearlessness according to one's intelligence. But in you, there is no duality. So this is about Krishna being absolute. Because people, it's very hard to understand the actual nature of the Supreme Lord. And when one looks at what goes on in the material world, it is especially hard to understand. There are so many good things that go on. There are so many evil things that go on. This is a typically posed problem. If God is all-powerful and there's evil in the world, that means either he can't stop it, which means he's not all-powerful, or he wants it to happen, which means he's not all good. So therefore, they find fault in God's nature with their logic. But from his point of view, everything that happens is good. And the problem is we don't see things from his point of view because we're so tiny. But from our point of view, we can never understand the Supreme's point of view. And that is the point that's being made. We can't understand the Supreme Lord from our point of view. And the example given, because we're so tiny and insignificant. And the example is given, there's a rope. Did you ever see a rope at night in the dark and think it's a snake? Not in Perth, possibly. But in other places of the world where snakes slither here and there, it happens. You see a rope and someone says, oh, it's only a rope attached to the bucket from the well. Don't worry. And you go, wow. So someone may think it's a rope. No, it's a rope. And someone may see it's a snake. It's the same object, but someone sees it as one thing and someone sees it as another. But the Lord, he is the one who gives both mentalities to the people by his grace. Matta smittam jnanam apanam cha. By His grace, He allows someone to see, one person to see it as a rope, and another person to see it as a snake. And He Himself is above that type of seeing. There's no duality, so He inspires fear and fearlessness according to one's intelligence, and He gives that intelligence. And yet He is above it all, beyond it all. Here's Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord says, Yeyatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. As one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the reservoir of everything, including all knowledge, all truth, and all contradictions. The example cited herein is very appropriate. So He's the reservoir of all truth and the reservoir also of all contradictions. That means He's the source of all truth and He's the source of everything that appears contradictory as well. The example cited herein is very appropriate. Prabhupada continues. A rope is one truth, but some mistake it for a snake, whereas others know it to be a rope. Similarly, devotees who know the Supreme Personality of Godhead do not see contradictions in Him. It's one object and people may see it in two ways. So similarly, people without devotion may see the Lord in so many different ways. But the Lord Himself is above that and beyond the contradictions. And devotees see the Lord as that, beyond all the contradictions. But non-devotees regard Him as the snake-like source of all fear. For example, when Nrisingadeva appeared, Prahlad Maharaj saw the Lord as the supreme solace, where his father, a demon, saw Him as the ultimate death. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhayam Dvitiya Vinaveshita Syad, fear results from being absorbed in duality. And what is above duality? What does duality mean? Seeing good and bad. Oh, I don't want this to happen. I want this to happen. This is really good. Oh, this is what's raining today. That's really bad. Cold, it's really bad. It's warm, it's really good. It's too warm, it's really bad. It's just right, it's really good. Duality. But the devotees don't see in that way. They don't see in that way at all. But that consciousness is very rare. When one has so fully taken shelter of Krishna, they just see Krishna's mercy in everything. So they're seeing Krishna in everything. And therefore they are above the dualities of this world. They just see Krishna in everything that happens. And therefore they can be fearless in this world because they're seeing Krishna in everything. So it's very interesting how Indra is speaking in this way, but he's not on this level because he's called the Lord because he's terrified of this Vritrasura and he wants protection from him. So that's it's somewhat showing his position, even though he's speaking in this exalted way, showing that he's not yet on this platform. So bhayam dvitiya vinavesha tasyat, fear results from being absorbed in duality. When everything is Krishna's mercy, when one lives in that, then what is fearful in this world? When one is in knowledge of duality, one knows both fear and bliss, happiness and misery. The same Supreme Lord is a source of bliss to devotees and fear to non-devotees who have a poor fund of knowledge. God is one, but people understand the absolute truth from different angles of vision. The unintelligent see contradictions in Him, but sober devotees find no contradictions. And we'll read this. This will be the 38th verse will be the last one we read today, and a teeny bit of the purport. So now they're saying that he's beyond all contradictions. And they've already explained how he can be known when one's heart is pure and dependent upon him in bhakti. And he reveals himself according to his desire, and then one gets different want depending upon the quality of one's desire. One will get one realization or another of the Lord. And now he's going to explain, Indra or the demigods are explaining how the Lord is the active principle of everything. He's the essence of everything. With deliberation, one will see that the Supreme Soul, although manifested in different ways, is actually the basic principle of everything. The total material energy is the cause of the material manifestation, but the material energy is caused by him. Therefore, he is the cause of all causes, the manifester of intelligence and the senses. He is perceived as the supersoul of everything. Without him, everything would be dead. You, as that supersoul, the supreme controller, are the only one remaining. He is the supreme cause of all causes, of the essence and the essence of everything. And the last part of Prabhupada's purport. According to various stages of intelligence, one realizes the presence of the Supreme in everything through the manifestations of his energies. The entire world is permeated by the three gunas, the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, and one can understand his presence, the Lord's presence, according to one's modes of material nature. Some people understand the Lord as the most fearful thing, and they see him only as death and the crushingness of time. And others, like Prahlad Maharaj, see the Lord, even if he's in the most fearsome feature, as kind and benedictory, depending upon one's intelligence, one's vision, his purity. So he is the active principle in all fear and everything in the material world, source of all bliss, is everything. So this is the glorious Lord. So I should stop here. And if Krishna allows, next Wednesday we'll continue. Complete these prayers. And then there's the Lord's reply, which will take us to the end of the chapter. Chapter 9. Thank you very much. These prayers are very complicated, intellectual, and hard to follow. Possibly late at night, so you all listen very attentively. Thank you. Usually in the evening it's better to have stories, pastimes. Deep philosophy is harder to concentrate on after a long day. But you all listen very carefully. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Which verse is it? Why above realization of Narayana is realization of Baladev? That part? Because Baladev, see, there's originally Krishna, and Krishna's only expansion is Baladev. And then Baladev expands into what's called the quadruple expansion, or the chaturvyuha expansion of Shankarshan and Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Vasudev, like that. And then those are the lords of Vaikuntha. And then from them comes Mahashankarshan. From all the one Shankarshan comes Mahashankarshan, and Karanadakshai Vishnu comes from him. And then, so each of those different expansions, they have a source They're equal, they're all God, but they all have a source. And the source of the Vaikuntha expansions is Lord Baladev. Is that what you're asking? Okay, I got it right. And the source of Baladev is Krishna. So the example given is in the Brahma Samhita, they are like different candles. So if you take a candle, do you know this example? Have you heard it before? So the candles, they have the same potency once one is lit yet from another, but yet there is an original candle. So the original candle is Krishna. And the second candle is Baladev. And in that way, so many expansions come.
Hari means to take away.
That's one meaning of Hari, he who takes away.
So you could say Krishna can also take it away.
But he takes away. He takes. But do we not want things taken away from us?
No.
How about your misery and your old age and your death? You wouldn't mind that being taken away. So he also takes that away. So it's a positive thing. When he takes something negative, turns positive. Well, we wouldn't be here if we didn't do something wrong somewhere. So he takes away from the devotees, he takes the misery away. From the non-devotees, he takes away their lives. For the devotees, by taking away the material body, he's awarding them the spiritual life, spiritual birth.
And if he can give people, if Krishna can give wealth, or he can give knowledge, or maybe advanced knowledge, or wealth, or anything like that, that the material world is capable of giving him, he can also take that away as well.
And it's considered his real mercy when he takes everything away and makes us fully dependent on him. Do you want him to do that? Think about it. Tell me later. It's a heavy question. Because theoretically you say, yes, take me, take away everything from me. But then when it starts happening, we start crying. And not Krishna. We say, why are you doing this to me? When there's pain or something like that. We get sick or lose something that we're attached to. When he takes away Harisya Sadanam Sanai, it is said that when Krishna is kind to someone, he'll give him so many things, but when he's really kind, he takes everything away. And then no one likes us anymore. No one's kind to us anymore. No one's friendly, and we have no one but him, we have nothing but him. And our heart becomes focused upon him. Our consciousness becomes his at that time. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.